Hey, this is Brandon McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop. This is Season 6, Episode 16. I'm John DiCarlo. Sam Cohn and Sam Newman are with me. We told you this is our second podcast of the week. We had our National Signing Day podcast yesterday, and we told you that we were hoping to talk to Temple safety Amir Tyler, and we are pleased to have him with us today. Amir, thank you for joining us. How you doing? Rich Berg told me it was your birthday yesterday, right?
Yeah, it was. I appreciate you guys having me, man.
Oh, no problem. What, Amir, what can you do on your birthday during a pandemic when you don't have too many options? What can you do to celebrate your birthday?
I mean, just spend time with the family. This is probably like my first Christmas home, my first bowl game I haven't been to since I came to college.
So you just spend time home with family?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm not kind of used to being home at this time. I'm usually practicing it right now.
Yeah.
So, it's a blessing.
I want to ask you a question, because this is in the era of the transfer portal, where guys are coming and going. We don't want to assume anything. Are you coming back to Temple next season to play your final season of eligibility at Temple?
Absolutely. I'm not going nowhere.
So as a follow-up to that, you know, I think, you know, in years past, I wouldn't be asking you this, but tell listeners and tell fans out there why you're coming back. Because one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about, amongst so many other things, you've had a great career and you have a lot to look forward to. Tell readers or tell listeners why you're coming back, because I think from the outside looking in, fans who don't understand the transfer portal are thinking, okay, we see Anthony Russo leaving, we see IGM leaving. There are guys coming and going. You're getting a really talented quarterback from Georgia who's coming in. You've got a defensive lineman from Washington, a running back from Illinois. Explain to people why you're deciding to stay.
It was just Temple, just the home to me, you know. Like last year would have been my last year if it wasn't for COVID. So like we had the blessing of, you know, just me being able to play another year of college football, and I wouldn't think of going nowhere else. And out of all the assistant coaches that I had since I've been at Temple, Coach Jelk has been by far like one of the best coaches that I had. Like his technique, his attention to detail, like him just making me become an NFL safety. Like I feel like me getting to the next level, he'll be a perfect guy to get me there if I just follow his instructions and do what I got to do. And just, you know, having Coach Carey behind my back, like Coach Carey, he's a player-led coach. So I feel like I could learn a lot from Coach Carey and he could learn a lot from me. I just kind of had that connection with him. I feel like, you know, I don't want to just leave him out to dry for the last year, and I wouldn't want to go nowhere anyway. So
when you see, and I guess you probably might see this from, you know, from people on the outside looking in, like I said, when guys start leaving, some of the, you know, there are fans on the outside looking in saying, well, what's going on? If Ifeanyi's leaving, IGM's leaving, Russo's leaving, you know, Quincy left last year. And again, the transfer portal's hitting everybody. There are some fans on the outside looking in thinking that because guys are leaving, that there's a disconnect with the coaches, or that there's something wrong with the program. Is there anything to that, or do you think that's a really unfair perception of what's going on?
I would say that's I wouldn't say it's an unfair perception, but I can't speak on their behalf of why they felt like they needed to leave or they felt like they wanted to go to the best school. At the end of the day, I've been at Temple with them. They are my brothers regardless. I take their side on any decision they want to make, and if that's the decision they felt, then, you know, it's on them. I wouldn't put it all on Temple, though. You know, it's a lot of stuff that goes into it. It's kind of like their decision. Like, it's not really like a Coach Carey decision or their head coach decision. It's kind of like their decision, like what they choose to do with their life, like, or how they want to end their last career, you know, their last game.
What is the mood of the program right now? Because you guys, it's been a long time since Temple had a one-win season. And of course, we know that this was not a typical season, you know, but you get to that ECU game, and we'll ask you about that a little bit later. You guys were playing with a shell of a roster. You couldn't play in that game. You had so many injuries, so many COVID-related absences. What's the mood of the program right now? Obviously, I'm sure 1-6 is 1-6, and you guys are frustrated, but is there also this sense of wanting to get back as soon as possible and kind of proving that this past season was a fluke?
Absolutely. You know, we kind of let a lot of people down this past season due to COVID injuries and just people not being ready to play or not able to play. So I just think, like, we had a lot of young guys that played that kind of helped, that will kind of help us guide us into the next year. A lot of young guys that wouldn't have played last year, they played this year. And, you know, a lot of people are hungry. Even though a lot of people, like, a lot of our star players left, a lot of our senior leadership left, you know, just because they left, like, I don't think people are on edge, like, oh, we're going down a drain, we're going down a drain. Like Coach Carey has said, like, the door's open for them and, you know, the door's open for other people as well. So if they leave, there's room for other people to come in as well. And, you know, I see a lot of people coming in. I know a couple of the transfers that's coming in, and I know what they headed for. I know where their head's at. So I know we all just on a plan to be better than last year, better than any previous year, is the best that we could be.
Who are the transfers that you know that are coming in?
I talked to the UConn corner. That's one of the transfers I know a little very well. I was talking to him a lot. I just like his mindset and what he had on the plate just coming in and going forward, even though we had the season that we did last year, you know. That was kind of shy a lot of people away, like coming to Temple, not knowing if the program's the same, not knowing if the work ethic's the same, not knowing if the coaching ability's the same, you know, just him putting the trust in the coaches and understanding what we're really trying to do and what we're going to.
Hey, Amir, you know, as a veteran leader and single-digit guy, what type of responsibility fell on you to keep the team together amidst, you know, an unprecedented season of college football that we've never seen before in the pandemic? How do you feel the team responded to the level of adversity that it dealt with as well?
I would say a lot of guys – I wouldn't say a lot of guys. I would say some guys kind of shy from the adversity. They didn't know what could happen. They didn't know what was going on, you feel me? And I don't discredit nobody from that because the coronavirus is serious. So you feel me, regardless of the season, if you put your family first and your health, then you feel me, I appreciate everything in your life and I'll pray for you and your family as well. You still being a teammate at Temple. But I feel like the adversity we had is just something that we haven't hit before. So just, I would say as the young guys, I would say they took it and they ran with it. A lot of the young guys performed way better than I would have took it under myself if I was a young guy myself in this situation that they have. So I would say the adversity is kind of new, but they definitely met the standard that we were supposed to be at.
Kind of just speaking as your role as a leader, it seemed that like guys like MJ Griffin, Alex Odom, Trey Blair, they kind of gravitated towards you as a respected veteran in the safeties room. What did you see from those guys and what can Temple fans kind of expect from them going forward?
I see a lot of growth from them guys. I see a lot of growth from each one of them games those guys play. They worked on something that they had bad in the beginning of the season. And by the end of the year, that technique or bad play they put on film wasn't on film because of the growth that they showed and they displayed on the field and off the field as well. So that's just also coming from, you know, having Coach Yelk as a leader. I lead the guys a lot, but having Coach Yelk as a leader just to direct me in the right position kind of helps that a lot. Like, with his respect and the players knowing that I'm the captain of the team, I'm a single digit, and I can help them as well. They just kind of shy how I respect Coach Yelk to me. You feel me? So they show the same respect as I'm a player coach. And that helps a lot because if you're willing to do that as a player and fall in line for your other players, then that will make everything easier, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, Mirek, just quick follow-up kind of on that same note. What are some of the younger guys that you're excited about? Maybe some of the players that we saw, maybe some players that we didn't see, you know, that you were able to see their development of practice, both sides of the ball. Who are some of the guys that you're excited about going forward?
One of the guys that I'm excited about, obviously, it's, you know, it's a couple guys in my room. MJ, Alex Odom, Trey Blair, absolutely. And another guy I'm excited about is a guy that's outside of my room, a linebacker, Kobe Wilson. I'm kind of excited to see what he got in store. You know, he showed me a lot this year that I wouldn't expect from him being a freshman and coming in and playing this early, you know. But I think he's going to have a great season if he continues to do what he has to do.
Amir, you were roommates with Chappelle Russell and Sean Bradley, two guys who took you under their wings and kind of showed you the way. What do they teach you about being a leader, and what are some of the lasting lessons that you've learned from them that you've tried to implement with some of the younger guys, being a leader yourself?
I can say one of the lessons that I learned from Sean and Chappelle was just going hard every day. You know, when you're a leader, you can't pick and choose when you want to go hard. Even if, you know, the year that we had right now, a lot of people would have quit. A lot of people would have folded under adversity. You know, we didn't win or lose, but me being a leader is just developing our players and developing the things that we have to work on. And as well as me too, you know, that's one thing I learned from them too. Even though I'm a leader and I got to criticize a lot of people on my team, I got to look in the mirror and criticize myself as well to make sure I'm doing the right thing to keep my team on track and to make sure I'm living right. So just me living right, you know, that's pretty much it.
And how close are you with Sean and Chappelle still? Like, what have you heard from them about playing in the NFL and their experiences during what was a similar unprecedented season?
I'm not even going to lie. I'm still as close to them as I was if they was living here. You know, I probably call Sean and Chappelle every day. I probably call him a little too much. I think I got Sean a fine. I called him during meetings the other day. I forgot. So I kind of got to get used to this, this atmosphere of them actually being in the NFL. But they told me, you know, it's a blessed lifestyle to live. You know, every day you got to come out and work. You feel me? Your position can get took anyway. You know, Sean just telling me him, the atmosphere of him still being in Philly and the fans and the coaches, how they speak to him, how they speak highly on special teams. And, you know, you obviously getting paid for it. So it's something that you can't just like, it's something that you got to love. You feel me? You're going to do something that you love and you getting paid for it. So, you know, they tell me that part too. I tell them I ain't there yet. I'm trying.
Amir, that the ECU game, from the outside looking in, we're reporters, we're not there with you guys. And you didn't play in that game. But can you tell us what that was like? I mean, that just had to be probably one of the toughest situations you could imagine. You're about to take the field. You guys get word that one of your teammates might have a positive COVID test. And then guys like Arnold, Braswell, boom, they're like, hey, you guys can't play because you're a contact trace. You're already out. So many guys are already out. And then it's like, okay, you got to go hit the field after this with, again, just a shell of a roster of what you guys would normally have. Can you explain to listeners what it was like to go through that and what those moments were like before that game?
It was definitely like a crazy up and down scheme, because when they tell you that you might have the contact trace, it's a heavy on the mic. Because yes, man. Sorry. But a lot of the people, they'll tell you, like, you feel me, you might get me contact traced, or you might be able to not play the game. And sometimes when they tell you that, the guys still play the game, so we try to think of the bright side all the time. So when they happen to tell us, like, you feel me, like, these guys actually can't, and it was happening to be, like, at least 10 minutes before we went outside. At least 10 minutes before we went outside when they told everybody they couldn't play. So when they told us that, a lot of guys was just in shock, you know. They didn't understand what was going on. They didn't understand if we was going to go on with the game. But, you know, a lot of people that played that game didn't really know the game plan. They didn't really, like, understand our playbook still. Like, it was a lot of young guys that shouldn't have played but that still play. And I will give the hats off to them, because it could have been a lot worse. But, you know, it's a lot of things we got to correct. But they definitely handled it well. It was just something I wouldn't wish on nobody to go through with the corona. I can't even, like, explain, like, how that sequence went. Like, it was just something I wouldn't want to go through again.
Was it – it sounds like it was stressful. Is that the best way to explain it?
Absolutely. It was even more stressful. Like, it was just more stressful, the fact that I couldn't, like, do anything to help the team. Mm-hmm. That was the most stressful part. Like, I couldn't do anything to help you. I couldn't do anything – like, I couldn't suit up. It was just, like, a lot of stuff going on. Like, and we can only control what we control at that point.
What did the coaches say at that point when the guys have to hit the field? And, again, like, some of your teammates, and, again, some really good players, like Arnold and Braswell and those guys, now you're depleted even more. I don't know if you were there at that point. Again, it's so correct – feel free to correct me here if you weren't in the locker room, if they had you outside. I don't know what it's like when you're injured, but if you were there in the locker room, what can Rod Carey and Jeff Knowles and the coaches, what do they say to you guys at that point right before you play? How did they explain it to you? What can they try to say to motivate you when you're down that many players after that?
I mean, at this point, I'm kind of a motivational guy. So at this point, it wasn't really kind of too much they could tell me, but as a team aspect, I feel like when Coach Carey came into the locker room, he kept it 100. Like, he told everybody what was going on. He told them what was going to happen. And then that was it. And he told us, like, you feel me, it's either we could just sit here and not play at all and just forfeit a game, or we could sit here and go out and put the ball down, play football like we've been wanting to play football for the rest of the year. So a lot of guys probably wouldn't even been at this point, and they're here. And he just told them, like, basically, like, you feel me, like, show me what you got and play for one another.
Amir, just a quick follow-up. Are you saying that the guys might not have known the game plan and that sort of stuff? When we talked to Dan Archibald during the season, he kind of said that Jeff Knowles, you know, slowed down the defense for a lot of the younger guys just to make sure that you guys were getting set and kind of just dumbed it down a little bit. Do you think that really helped you guys down the stretch just playing there's UCF and ECU? Because it really seemed like something clicked with the defense in that UCF game.
Absolutely, absolutely. I felt like just not putting a lot of pressure on a lot of people, just making them, you know, just not making the young guys think as fast as the pace was going. That kind of made them play faster. So I would believe that definitely helped us a lot.
And just, you know, going back to the craziness of the season, what was your reaction when the Cincinnati game was canceled and you found out that, I mean, your guys' season was pretty much done at that point?
I was kind of a little frustrated knowing that I was kind of like working to get rehab back. Kind of made me mad, and I got a little grudge against Cincinnati. It's always a good game when we play them, regardless of our record. It doesn't really matter. It's just always a good game, and it was top 10 in the nation, so I definitely wanted to play them. So,
Amir, this was Tyler Yelk's first season coaching the safeties. Obviously, he's coached the position previously in his coaching career, but how do you feel he fared this season in keeping the group together amidst, you know, so much uncertainty? And what's your relationship been like with him?
I would say Coach Jelk is probably – I probably have one of the best relationships with Coach Jelk. He's probably one of the best, like, coaches I had since I've been here. Just him off the field, you know, just him, like, making sure you're straight as a player, school-wise as well. And definitely in the like, it's like – I don't know how to explain it. Like he's like a player, basically. I would say Coach Jelk is like a player. You feel me? Coach Jelk, he demonstrates a lot of stuff for us so we can understand at a different level. So, like, for the younger guys, he'll put stuff in different levels for guys. Like, for me, he'll have it in, like, say, like, level 300, level 400. For the younger guys, he'll go down to level 200, level 100. Like, he'll make sure you understand the concept so you can't say you can't understand the concept. If your ability isn't there, he'll definitely work with you that as well. But if you know what you're doing and you got a place to go, like, Coach Jelk is definitely, like, one of the best coaches to, you know, be with.
Amir, obviously this season, again, it's been crazy. It wasn't what you guys expected or would have hoped for. But are there any positives that you can take away from it when you guys reconvene as a group and then hopefully you have some semblance of a normal, you know, spring ball, maybe in March or April, or when you guys convene again to start working out? Is there anything positive that you can take from this season at all?
Absolutely, absolutely. When you learn a lot of stuff, you learn a lot of things when you're losing. You learn a lot of things of how to get the team back together. Just knowing what kind of attitude our team has, regardless if we was losing, we were still down. We probably was down like three, four touchdowns, and it was games where guys still wouldn't quit until the clock was over. You feel me? It was guys still playing their heart off. You know, another thing I can say we took from this is just having a lot of experience from the freshmen. From guys that wouldn't have played, like, this probably would have been their first year playing, but they already had a couple 6 or 7 games in. So now they get a kind of understanding of what the speed and the atmosphere is, you know, and just, you know, just having each other's back. This haven't been like the best season I had, but the team just coming together because we don't have too much to offer. So, like, the team coming together, knowing that we might lose this player. No, we might lose this player. I'm talking to players that I wouldn't talk to in a regular. I'm around players that I wouldn't be around in a regular just to make sure they know what they're doing, just to make sure everybody's straight. So I think we got a lot from this season, even though it was a losing one.
Just to follow up on that, like, because of everything that's going on, guys hitting the portal, staying or going, are you one of those guys? Like, how do you – I guess my question is, how do you work that? Because on one hand, you say – I want to respect guys and their individual decisions if they want to stay or go, but it also does sound like you're that guy that a lot of people come to now. Are you one of the guys that's kind of like trying to hold things together and saying, hey, stick with us. There are brighter times ahead. Are those like some of the conversations that are going on now too?
I mean, I talked to some of the guys before they left. I didn't know a lot of them were leaving. We definitely talked about the situation, you know, and it was in the questions that I asked them and stuff. They told me a couple of times they might think about going here, might think about going here, and they might think about staying at Temple. So like, I try to bring guys together, but the one thing I'm not going to do is beg you to stay here. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to be at Temple, then I can't beg you to be here, and I won't want you to be here if you don't want to be here, because then you're not giving us 100%. And if we can't get 100%, we're not trying to have a season that we had last year. So, you know, some of the guys that we lost a lot of good guys. We lost a lot of good guys. They still family to this day. But, you know, people got to make the best decision for their family and for themselves. You know, I would never, ever say anything about that, because I could be in that situation as well. I just happened not to be in that situation. Like, I chose to stay here and just build, you know, so.
Amir, just, you know, taking a step back here, taking a look back at the 2016 recruiting class, which you were a part of, now that you can kind of reflect, are you impressed with just how talented that class has turned out to be? And do you think that just really speaks to Temple truly being a developmental program?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I knew the class that I came in with, I knew those guys, what they was going to be. I knew what those guys was going to do. Like, they kind of showed a lot more than people expected, but there's definitely a building process here if people take the time to actually go through the process. You know, people have to understand it's a process. You just don't wake up one day and you're a single digit, or you just don't wake up one day and then you're a captain of the team. Like, they got to understand what you got to go through to be where those guys are at right now.
Amir, you've alluded to this a little bit, but can you talk about some of the young guys you're really optimistic about on both sides of the ball, maybe some insight into some of the other young defensive players or some of the guys you go up against on offense, like any receivers who stood out behind Brandon Mack, Jaden Blue, Randall Jones, any of those guys?
I would definitely have to say Fox as a receiver. He's one of the guys that stood out to me. He's a great slot receiver. You know, he was battling a couple of injuries this year, but once he develops more a lot, I think he will be a great contribution to the offense. Especially, who else I could say? David Wagugu as an offensive lineman. He definitely has shown me a lot of growth and potential. Jose Barbone, he's not really a young guy, but he definitely has shown me a lot. For the defensive side, I could say TJ hasn't got the playing time he was supposed to get this year, but I think like this year, because he was bad on injuries too as well. So I think this year he would definitely show me what he's been showing in practice in the games, hopefully. Another guy I would say, yeah, I think that's it. I already said all the young safeties and stuff, so.
Amir, you talked obviously about Chappelle. You guys played together in high school, and you talked about what it's like to have him as a friend, have Sean as a friend. I think I've probably asked you about this before. I know I asked Chappelle about it. You have the chance to do what Chappelle did too, which is go on to the NFL after this season. And, you know, that Lakewood community has been through a lot. Your school's been through a lot. The football program's been through a lot. It's this big part of the state of New Jersey, but as a community, it's gone through a lot. What does it mean for you to see someone like Chappelle go and make it? And what would it mean for you to come out of Lakewood and go on to the NFL and make it?
It meant everything to me. To see Chappelle get his name called in that draft meant everything to me. It felt like I got called in the draft, to be honest. Like, that's a life-changing thing right there. Like, it's something that a lot of people don't experience. And when you do get the experience, it's just shocking. It's something that you wouldn't expect. Like, even though you work this way, you work this hard all your life for it, it's something that you still don't expect. And when it happens, it's just a blessing. And, you know, if I happen to be grateful to be blessed to do the same thing as Chappelle do, I'll be forever grateful. You know, that's something that doesn't happen a lot in our community. So for Lakewood to see Chappelle actually get drafted and actually make it to the NFL, it definitely like woke Lakewood up a lot, to let them understand that, you know, even if we come from here, even if our life was this bad or we had to go through this trial or this tribulations, like, everything is still possible. Like, it's still a positive sight.
One of the other things I think that people can say about you is when you came out of Lakewood, you weren't an unknown recruit. You had, I mean, from what I can remember, you had some other Power Five offers. I think you had didn't you have Syracuse and Pitt? You had some other big programs that had looked at you too, right?
Yeah, Syracuse, Pitt, North Carolina. You had a couple.
So, and then you come in and you didn't play right away. Some guys take that and say, and especially now with the transfer portal being what it is, now it wasn't like that back then, but some guys might say, okay, screw it. I'm not playing. I'm going to transfer. You stuck around. And now obviously you're one of the best players on that defense. And now guys are really, they were this year, and they're certainly going to be looking to you for leadership next year. Can you take us through what it was like to have to sit and wait? And I guess you're only human. Did you have some times where you got frustrated and thought, man, I should be playing and I'm not? And if so, what was it like to go through that and then get to the point you're at now?
Absolutely. Like, I thought about that every day of me not playing. Like, that whole transaction of me just not getting in. Like, a lot of people know, like, I hang out with Sean Chappelle all the time. Like, since I got to college, those were the people that I hung out with all day. So with them playing and me not playing, like, that, I was still sad at the fact that I wasn't playing, but it definitely brought me up. Like, them guys, just seeing them achieve their goals and just seeing them on the field, like, and they motivated me a lot. Like, me seeing that, it motivated me. It wanted to make me I wanted to be a single digit. I wanted to be a leader on the team because I seen them guys doing it, like, and I seen them achieving that as well, not just doing it, but they were doing it well. So, and I would say my journey, it's just been like, it's just been crazy. Like, my freshman year, I didn't play my freshman year. They flagged my SATs. They flagged me for SATs. So I had to force the red shirt. After I redshirted, I had came to, I came back. I didn't play that whole year. Came back my sophomore year. I tore my meniscus. Mm-hmm. I tore my meniscus. After I tore my meniscus, I came back another year and I re-tore my meniscus. I think that was my redshirt sophomore year. I re-tore my meniscus coming into this redshirt junior year. I re-tore my meniscus and my MCL. So I had to I had a scope surgery to work back for that. So once I got back, I was kind of like just battling, like, we had a mad different coaches. So I was battling back from an injury, and some of the old coaches that we had, like Coach Collins and them, they didn't believe that I was fully recovered from my injury, and they didn't believe that I fully had the playbook developed as well to be like in the rotation to be a safety. So once I had that kind of like put fuel to my fire, just knowing like people didn't think I was going to be ready, or people didn't think I'd be in a position I'd be in today. So just, you know, after I beat them injuries and just got on the field, I really just tried to get on the field any way possible. Like, I started all four special teams for Coach Collins. Like, I did whatever he needed at any way. It didn't matter what it was. I was trying to get on the field. And then once it happened, I just rolled with it. I just kept being a leader, kept thinking positive, you know, kept talking to God just to help me.
One of the things, too, because you are part of, as Sam said, you're part of that 2016 class, and – you've been through a lot. And some of the guys I talk to on the outside, and there are other people outside the program that say, you know what, it's no wonder that some of the guys are leaving, because they've just been through a lot and maybe they just want to see something else. You were recruited by Matt Rhule. You've been through the whole thing with Matt Rhule, Jeff Collins. Then you go through the Manny Diaz thing, which is crazy. He comes in for all of 18 days and leaves. And then Rod Carey comes in. Can you tell us, because it sounds, again, unless I'm reading it wrong, like there was something that maybe clicked with you and this staff. And if so, what did they have to do when Rod Carey and his staff come in and you guys have just seen not one, but two coaches leave on you? What did they do to click with you guys? And what did they have to do to build trust with you guys? Because I'm sure it had to be weird. You're probably thinking, like, what the hell's going on at this point?
Yeah, it was definitely weird. I think the coaches had to be like how Coach Carey is now, just player led. Like, some coaches come into the program and they try to, like, you know, like abuse the authority and just take over the program and just forget about all the stuff that we had going already, or all the stuff that we had from the foundation or our school, like traditions, a lot of things. And Coach Carey didn't do that. Like, he made his own traditions as well, but he let us keep some of the traditions that we felt like were much needed to the Temple University or Temple football team. So just him being open arms, understanding the players, understanding the organization, you know, not really being like a rah-rah coach. He could get like that if we make him like that. But Coach Carey is a real laid-back coach. Like, He wants us to not saying he wants us to figure it out by ourselves, but he trusts us to get it done and figure out what we're supposed to do. So just him having that trust and accountability for a lot of players kind of open arms for him and stuff. And I could definitely understand what you said that for as well as like a lot of people from our 2016 class, like leaving because they may have been through a lot or they maybe want to see something new. And that's why when I tell it, that's when I say, like, I can never be mad at them for, like, pardon me, y'all. That's when I say I can never be mad at them for that. Like, I can never be mad at them for going to help their family out, going to have a better view for themselves or a better image as well. So I know they've been through a lot. I know we've been through a lot as a team. So if that's the decision they make with them and their family, then I know it was a heartfelt decision, and that's something that they really thought of a lot.
Hamir, we have a couple of reader mailbag questions here. So these come from our message board. So these are screen names that I'm going to read to you. The first question comes from dblaze75 is the screen name. His question is, Temple has had its share of injuries and COVID cases this season, but what is it like in the locker room to finish with one win? Do players start to question the schemes and the coaching? Does the level of trust change between the players and the coaches?
I mean, absolutely, there's a couple of players in them that will say they don't trust the coach in order, don't feel like schemes went down, right? But when you go through these losses and you break down film and you break down the game plan that we have forth, you will see that there's each game there has been a lot of mistakes. With me, myself, even though you guys think, like, I may play an amazing game or I may have 100% grade or like, I still I just – oh, if we lost and just blaming on the coaches. Like, it's a lot about execution and just understanding the game plan.
And the second question here, the screen name is North Broad. He wants to ask you, I don't know if you got questions about this. I think it was either last week or the week before you had this loyalty is everything tweet. And so when you tweeted that out, some people took that to mean I'm staying loyal to the program. What did you mean by that tweet? Was that trying to send a message of like, staying loyal to the program, or is this reader reading that tweet completely wrong?
I said in the wrong. It wasn't towards like the program or anybody leaving. It was just like morals that I stand on.
Mm-hmm. Amir, one last question.
You know, you need to be around.
One last question to close things out for you. We ask you a lot of the same questions after a game in spring ball, preseason camp. We're always asking you about football related stuff. What's something that fans may not know about you? What's something that people don't know about Amir Tyler that, you know, that might surprise them or something, maybe something outside of football that they don't know about you?
A lot of people don't know that I'm adopted and I've been through 5 to 6 foster homes. Mm-hmm. With me and my brothers, I have 6 brothers and 1 sister, 1 little sister. My older brother moved in with his dad, and the rest of my family just been through foster homes. And that's when I came. I met with Stacy and Sean, and they happened to take me and one of my little brothers in. And my other 3 little brothers got separated and went to another foster home. So it's just kind of been like a you know, fight with me, just trying to make it to the NFL so I could just get my family back together. You know. Just make sure my whole family's straight, regardless of the situations.
And when I hear that, that's remarkable. Like, I can't imagine going through that myself. A lot of people can't imagine going through that. It might sound like the obvious question, but how strong has that made you as a person? Because that's remarkable just to hear that. You went through a lot even before you became a college football player. What's it like to go through that and to pull through that and get to where you are now?
It just molded me to the person I am today. Like, just, you know, I got a lot of little brothers and I got a little sister. I got cousins. Like, I got a lot of people that I look up to that is family. I don't know a lot of my family. So the people that I do know in my family, they look up to me and they think of me highly. So I try to set a standard. Like, they don't know me as Amir Tyler, the single digit, Amir Tyler, the leader. Like, they just know me as Amir Tyler, their older brother. So I just try to set that standard to let them know, like, it's more to life. Like, it's more to life than just being a football player. It's more to life than just being in the streets if you want to do that. It's more to life that you could be anything you want to be. You know, you just got to give it 100%. You got to make sure you're serious about it, you know. I just let them know that I'm always going to be here for them, and just I'm just here to motivate. Like, I want them to understand, like, I'm doing this for us. Like, I'm trying to make it out. Like, you feel me? That's why I'm waking up every day at 6 o'clock. That's why I'm going to practice. That's why I'm trying to lead a team. Like, that, it's not just leading a team. That's things Coach K teaches. Like, it's just me becoming a man, just me becoming a better human being, a better person. So.
And do the final question for you, and thanks for sharing all this too. Do the guys on the team know your story and what you've been through? Because I imagine if they do, I would imagine it probably really humbles them and changes their perspective too. It just sounds amazing to me. Do they know your story, or is it something that you kind of eventually open up with? I mean, I would imagine maybe your closest friends know, but do guys know your story? And once they hear about it, what's their reaction?
I mean, one thing that we kind of did this year was Coach Kerry kind of opened up like groups for us to expand with different coaches, like offensive coaches with the defensive players, like defensive coaches with the offensive players, just for us to have more of a better environment for guys, you know? So I would say some groups, I talked to them about my experience. There's a couple people on the team that know, but a lot of people don't know that. They just, you know, they don't know, you feel me? They just think I'm a happy guy. You know, I just go around with my head high, you know? So when I do tell people, like, I don't want them to look at me differently. I don't want to be treated any differently. I don't want anybody to feel like, you know, just to give me any sympathy at all, you know? So when I do tell them, it's like, they're shocked. They're like, are you serious? Like, you feel me? You don't show this. Like, we never knew that and stuff like that, you know? But I kind of just tell them, like, that's something I guess that's something I had to go through to make me the person I am today. So they don't feel like a certain way. Like, that's why I don't like to speak about it but I obviously talk to y'all all the time, so I don't care. Y'all can put it in the paper. Y'all can write a book, whatever y'all want to do for us.
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll do a book together someday. Amir, this has been awesome, man. Thanks so much for making time for us. Really appreciate it. I know you guys wanted to be in a bowl game, but I hope on the bright side you can, you know, spend time with your family. And best of luck to you. And obviously, hopefully, we'll be speaking to you before too long when spring ball comes around.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Nah, I appreciate you guys for having me, man.
All right. A big thank you to Amir Tyler, Temple safety, who, as you heard there, is coming back. And, you know, we talked to you on yesterday's signing day podcast about just all the ups and downs of the transfer portal and the reaction of the fan base. And again, it is understandable when you see guys like Anthony Russo, guys like Isaiah Graham Mobley, guys like Ifeanyi Maje leaving the program and deciding to pursue other options and hearing that chatter out there and wondering, you know, just what the mood of the program is like. And again, I think, and again, we can react to this, of course, Amir's answers, you're getting answers from a guy who's really one of the guys now who's really going to be kind of like the heart and soul of that team. You heard about his incredible life story, what he's been through being adopted and going through multiple foster homes, the adversity that he's been through in his life, waiting to play, going through some of the same things that some of these other guys have gone through and the multiple head coaches. But again, this is what we try to do as reporters, is bring you guys the perspective and the thoughts and feelings of as many people as we can in the program. And it's interesting. Here's a guy who would have every reason to leave and is saying, you know, I'm not going anywhere. What'd you guys think of what he had to say?
Sam, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure, I can take it.
You look like you're ready to talk, and I was about to interrupt.
That's okay. I think the main thing that I took away from this, and I mean, John, you kind of started to talk about, like, he's going to be a really important piece on this team next year. But Amir Tyler echoed a lot of the sentiments of what we heard from Rod Carey and kind of what we heard throughout the program in the last, just since signing day, the last couple of days, working the transfer portal as guys leave, as guys come in. And that's, if you want, like, we want guys, and this is, I'm quoting, we want guys who want to be here. That's kind of their mindset right now. That's kind of where they want to be. So hearing him echo those sentiments and feel like, yeah, I'm one of the older guys on this team. I understand. I support every one of those guys that made that business decision to leave the program, do what's best for them. Those are my brothers. I fully support them. But at the same time, I want to be here. This is where I want to be. And I like what we're growing and building here. And I think this is where I can succeed. So I think I thought that was a very strong, well-articulated answer, and just kind of hearing him echo those same sentiments that we've heard throughout the program the last couple of days was interesting.
I think it was Amir was a perfect guest at the perfect time. I think it kind of worked out that we had to push it back to this week with kind of miscommunication last week. But again, I echo what we were saying yesterday pretty much. I mean, but he has more of a feeling of the program than we do. being inside the locker room, that, you know, these guys have business decisions to make, and he's not going to sit here and criticize them for the decisions that they're making. I mean, they have, like, Amir Tyler's in a different spot than some of these guys are. The year of eligibility creates all this mess, as well as the transfer portal. And that's, I guess, what we were trying to say yesterday, that this is just, you know, one of those unprecedented situations, which kind of hurts Temple because they're a group of five school. But Amir, I don't know. He was great, and he really gave a lot to offer on this pod for us. And it feels like, you know, he's definitely one of those true single-digit guys who Temple can definitely lean on as this program kind of maybe hits a youth movement a little bit with a lot of the older guys transferring out.
Yeah, and again, like we said yesterday, we're not privy to every single conversation that's going to go on between current players and former players. And as we talked about yesterday, I've talked to guys that liked Al Golden and didn't like Al Golden, liked Matt Rhule and didn't like Matt Rhule, liked Steve Dazio, didn't like Steve Dazio. Same thing with Jeff Collins. You heard near the end of the podcast there, Amir said, you know, Rod Carey's not much of a rah-rah guy. Sam, you and I were talking about this. I think I know how to take that. You know, one of the criticisms of Jeff sometimes was that he was like so into social media. And some of the guys I've talked to have said what Amir said is like, he's a player's coach. I mean, he'll get on you, but you know, again, sometimes when guys are leaving, you hear, oh, you know, in certain social media forums or whatever, oh, everything's going to crap. There's lack of communication. And then you hear Tyler say, well, yeah, one of the things that Coach Carey did was he created better communication with the players and the coaches. He had different groups, different lines of communication where defensive players were talking to offensive coaches. And you sit there and go, okay, that doesn't sound like total dysfunction to me. So again, in our role, and again, we're I promise you, we're not trying to sound self-righteous when we say this. You know, we get people who text us or call us or tweet at us and say, what's going on? What's going on? How come you guys aren't more panicked about guys leaving? And it's not our job to be panicked. You know, we report news, try to get different perspectives. And I'm not saying that because we had Amir Tyler on this podcast and he said positive things about the program that they're going to go 10-2 next year. We'll see what happens. You know, they definitely have some holes to fill on both sides of the ball. There's no question. And losing Ifeanyi Maje to the transfer portal, losing Dan Archibong to the NFL, we'll see what else happens on offense. They're losses, no question about it. You can bring in a DeJuan Mathis and his you know, his flashy recruiting profile. The guy starts to come in and prove himself because Anthony Russo is a loss and he's on his way to Michigan State. So not trying to minimize that, but again, I think it's interesting to get the perspective of someone who really now, I can't think of anybody else on that defense. Not that there won't be other guys who will step up, but again, you hear Amir Tyler's story. You know, he credits, as you heard him say there, a lot you know, of his development and maturity, like learning from his high school teammate, Chappelle Russell, who went by Chappelle Cook when he was at Lakewood High School, and Sean Bradley, of course. He had that detail there where he said, I'm calling him during meetings. Didn't realize I was calling him during meetings when they're in the NFL. But I can't think of too many guys who have been through what he's been through. And now you'd have to think that he's the unquestioned leader of that defense and he's deciding to stick around. So again, some great details there and some great insight from a guy who, as he said, isn't going anywhere. So we'll have more coverage for you guys again. You know, we don't have a ton of media access in the off season, probably not until after the holiday. If there's if they do pick up a couple of guys on the February signing period, we'll probably have more media access to Rod Carey, but yeah, we'll try to bring as many guests as we can. Talking about the transfer portal too, if you guys are listening out there and following along, Pete Thamel from Yahoo Sports, we're a Yahoo site. Wanted to share this story if you haven't seen it, and it gives more perspective to just what's going on with the transfer portal. And again, get the perception of it. These are losses when Temple loses players like this. But if you haven't had a chance to read this story from Pete, the headline is here, could hundreds of college football players be left stranded by NCAA apathy? And Pete talked to a few people here. He talked to USF coach Jeff Scott, who's, you know, obviously USF's one of Temple's counterparts in the American. And if you read this story, I'm not going to read the whole thing here. Jeff Scott saying, we're going to see a situation this year where there could be up to 1,000 players in the portal with nowhere to go. And it's true, you know, and Pete points out here, as of Wednesday morning, there are more than 750 FBS football players in the NCAA transfer portal. And that number is increasing by dozens each day. And one of the premises of the article is that, you know, this is going to be crazy. And on one hand, you know, it gives players total freedom, especially with the immediate eligibility waiver getting passed. They can leave with no consequences, but what they are doing is leaving behind a scholarship and an opportunity. And some of these guys could really be left on the outside looking in. One of the other lines of Pete's story here is the one-time transfer rule is expected to lead a flurry of group of five transfers looking to upgrade to bigger schools. So again, for the 5 millionth time, I can't live in Isaiah Graham Mobley's mind. We reached out to him for an interview request. He politely declined. I've had a chance to talk with him a little bit off the record, but just shooting the breeze, not asking him any interview questions about why he decided to leave. Just wished him well with his injury recovery. But you know, we don't live inside the mind of every single player. But again, it's our job as reporters to kind of just wrap our minds around this thing and just say, this really is changing college football. And again, like some of these group of five programs like Temple could be vulnerable. They could especially be vulnerable because of the multiple coaching changes. And you heard Amir Tyler talk about that too. So again, if you haven't had a chance to read this story from Pete, he's one of the better reporters in the business for sure. But has a lot of great perspective here on the transfer portal if you haven't had a chance to check it out.
John, another thing from that story, that Pete's story just right here is, I just saw that Kyle retweeted this, but they're saying, you know, if your son is in a high school and he has a 2022 scholarship offer, you should commit right now. So that might make tricky. It might make the class of 2022 that much more tricky. And they have a dead period till April 15th right now. So there's a lot of parts with that.
Yeah. And this is one of a couple of things that's really going to change. I think in a previous podcast, Kyle said this could, that the eligibility free season, which will change your scholarship totals for the foreseeable future, and what programs are going to have to do to manage that is going to be interesting. That, you know, managing the numbers on that combined with the transfer portal, Kyle had said it, and I don't think he's exaggerating, it could change college football for like the next decade. And again, you're seeing what's happening on a hyper-local level with Temple. Again, Rod Carey and the staff still have to prove themselves. They've been around for 2 years. They went 8-5 last year, pretty solid regular season, kind of get their butts handed to them in the bowl game. They'll question by a very good North Carolina team. They go 1-6 this year. Now guys are coming and going. But the sport of college football is really changing. Some of the stuff could be good. Some of it could be not so good. So again, just if you haven't checked it out already, I think it's an excellent job by Pete. Again, provides a lot of perspective on what's going on. We will shift to basketball here. We promised you that you would hear more from our esteemed basketball reporter, Sam Cohn, who didn't get to talk a lot of hoops yesterday. I told him yesterday, what did I say? We haven't heard from you in a minute. And then you chuckled at me because I'm saying something like we haven't heard from you in a minute. But Temple will finally, unless something happens between now, and we're recording this podcast on Thursday, unless something happens between now and Saturday at 4:30 p.m., Temple is finally going to play a basketball game. They're hosting NJIT. We've got a couple of basketball message board questions, our mailbag questions for you guys to answer in a few minutes. For us, questions from you to answer. I'm just doing so well right now. Sam, both Sams worked on a five-part basketball preview. The mega preview. You guys have dissected this team up, down, left, and right. Sam Cohn, you know, well, who knows? I wouldn't put it past you to dissect a lot of NJIT film, but you're going to be at the Leocora Center for us on Saturday, masked up and socially distanced, covering college basketball now in a COVID world. What are you expecting to see on Saturday, knowing full well that so much is up in the air, not just with the season itself, but just with this roster?
Yeah, a couple things. So for starters, I feel like a lot of things I'm either about to say or could say right now for what I'm expecting for this team as a whole, I've kind of beaten to a pulp on this podcast. And just because there's only so much you can talk about without having seen this team play. And there's only so much you can say about what to expect when there are essentially 9 new additions to the rotation, if you include Ty Strickland and Damian Dunn. But I will say that NJIT is not, I don't think NJIT poses an incredible challenge for Temple. I don't think NJIT is going to be, is this incredible team. They're moving from the ASUN conference to the America East. Mm-hmm. They're dealing with bringing guys back from injury. They're dealing with having some new guys. They do have one, their star player is their point guard. His name's Zach Cook, I believe. He averaged like 20 points last season, led the ASUN in scoring. He was the first player from NJIT to ever do so. So they have some talent in that backcourt. For the most part, they're somewhat of an undersized team, but I don't think they pose the biggest threat to Temple. With that being said, Aaron McKee did say in his press conference the other day that they don't really know what NJIT is going to throw at them, both because they also have not played a game and they've never really seen them play, and they have new guys. Temple and NJIT have only faced off in program history one time. It was back in 2016, December 17th. Temple won 68-63. So that's the only time these two teams ever faced off ever. And I, as I said, Aaron McKee pretty much said, like, he doesn't really know what NJIT is going to throw at them. So I think a lot of their preparation is internal. And with that being said, they have not had much time to prepare internally, or at least get in practice, run live scrimmages, put in sets, work on things. So a lot of what Aaron McKee said, and I put this in my story from Wednesday, is that less is more. That's what Aaron McKee's kind of mantra is going into Saturday, is that he's not thinking about coming out. And I said on an earlier podcast that it was probably like 2 weeks ago, that my impression or my guess would be that they're going to come out and slow the game down a little bit. I don't think that they would come out and try to play run and gun and just try to get guys kind of acclimated back into the game, just because they haven't played in so long. Like, first couple of possessions are not going to push the tempo the way they probably would the rest of the season or the way they want to. But they haven't really had a chance to put in stuff like that in terms of like half court sets. So I think they are probably going to come out of the come off the tip and try to push the tempo. But they're also I think what Aaron McKee wants from Saturday is just, and he said this, but this also just makes sense, is that play selfless, work hard, just go out, compete. It's the first game. Guys are going to be nervous. Guys are going to be a little stiff at first. You know, it's going to be weird getting acclimated to playing with no fans in the building. Aaron McKee said on Wednesday that, like, it's that's how you play when you grow up playing on the playground. There's nobody there watching. I think that's going to calm the nerves of a lot of guys. So I think that will help. But the biggest thing I'm expecting is to see who kind of stands out offensively. Who are the guys that that make that first impression, especially the young guys? So like a guy like Jeremiah Williams, who's expected to start, what is he able to do, in the first half and in his first game? What is he able to do at both ends of the floor? What's a guy like Damian Dunn, who played 18 minutes last year? We haven't really seen enough of a sample size to give you any kind of diagnosis on what he's able to do on the floor. We've heard about Jake Forrester expanding his game, moving outside the restricted area during the offseason. That was pretty much his entire game last year, but we've heard he's wanted to create that mid-range jump shot. We'll see, kind of if he shows flashes of that. We heard Ben Simmons, worked all offseason on creating a three-point shot, and he didn't take one against Celtics. So you'll see how much of that you'll see from guys like JP and Dre Perry. Both took, I don't want to call them declines. JP took more of a decline last season, and we'll see if he expects to be more of a stretch four kind of guy that can get up and down the floor. Dre Perry had the best three-point field goal percentage by percentage on the team, but he only took 63s. So we'll see if he kind of floats into a bigger role in terms of offensively. That's another guy that could play a huge role for this team. How many minutes does Caleb Battle get? How many minutes does Nick Jordan get? How many minutes does Quincy Adamakoya get? So I'm curious. I think that's my biggest question, is like, there's so many unknowns about these young guys. What's Aaron McKee's plan? And if I were to guess, I envision him playing 8, 9, 10 man rotation, and just, I think they'll jump on NJIT early, and I think a lot of guys will see minutes.
You said something earlier, Sam, where you said, I think you said that you don't expect them to run right away and maybe slow things down. Is the simple answer there that he just doesn't want to see a lot of turnovers early on? Or do you think that maybe Aaron McKee, although he certainly has had anything but a typical preseason, he didn't have a lot of time in the summer. We've talked a lot about how this relatively new roster didn't get time together in the summer, but at least on paper, you'd have to think that they have a chance of spacing the floor better than they did last year because of a guy like Caleb Battle. But we don't know if Brendan Barry's going to play, right? Because
he's not going to play Saturday.
Yeah, so he's not going to play. You don't have him. Yes, Quincy Adamakoya is a brand new player, but at least has the ability to shoot. You saw that Dre Perry could knock down some shots. Maybe JP Moorman rediscovers part of his role as a perimeter shooter. Do you think he might slow it down because he thinks he has the ability to space the floor a little bit better?
I think part yes, but part of why I said that is because I think if they did have the time to prepare for something like that, or to prepare to be able to play kind of in the half court, prepare to be able to slow the game down a little bit and like make smart decisions, I think he'd be more comfortable with it. But he harped a lot last season on, you know, taking care of the ball, like trying to space the floor. And the big thing was, don't try to win the game in one play. Don't necessarily try to make the hero play. Just play smart basketball. Just play together and do a lot of the little things. That's like, I mean, that's the biggest thing Aaron McKee has been saying for the last 2 years now is, guy, he needs guys to do the little things. He needs guys to dive on the floor for loose balls. He needs his guards to go after rebounds. He needs everybody to be on the glass. He needs everybody to do everything and play team basketball. And that's the way this team's going to win, because they have a lot of potential. They have a lot of skill, but they don't have a lot of experience. And the only ways to win in college basketball are to have one of two things, and the great teams have both, either skill or experience. And this team, I think, has some skill, but they don't have a ton of experience. And I think their potential is there. I think it's going to take time, but I think they should be very fortunate they have a tune-up game against NJIT, who, you know, I'm not going to tell you they're a terrible, terrible team. Anything can happen on Saturday, but they don't pose an incredible threat. They don't pose an American Conference team level threat. So I think having this tune-up game will be good for them. But I would say, I think I would retract my earlier statement. I think they will probably try to push. They're going to try to push the pace. They're going to space the floor. Just because that's probably what the only thing they've really had time to do is just work on getting up and down the floor.
So we do have a couple of basketball related mailbag questions. First one comes from Park Al, and his mailbag question is, what five man lineup will see the most minutes this year? What do you guys think?
That's a good question. Sam, you want to go first?
Yeah. All right. Here's just off the top of my head. I'm going to go with Ty, Damian, JP, Dre, and Jake Forrester. I think a lot of the younger guys are going to come off the bench. I think maybe you could see somebody like Caleb or Quincy getting in the mix there, but I think they might like Caleb as a guy who can come off the bench first and be that scorer off the bench, just because you do have Ty and Damian in the backcourt. And I feel like you're going to see Dre and JP on the floor together. Even though, you know, we talked on this podcast that they're kind of interchangeable players in some of the things that they do, but they are veterans. They are, I mean, they have done a lot for this university, our team captains. They're going to play. So is Jake. I'm going to stick with that for now.
I would agree with that five, but here's the thing I'll add is that, remember the discussion we had, Kyle brought up a good point. I think it was Kyle that brought up the point that when we were trying to decipher who's going to be the team's leading scorer, that they're probably, someone's going to lead the team in scoring. But the spectrum of guys putting up numbers is going to be a lot thinner. Like you're going to have multiple guys put up points. The scoring is going to be a lot more spread out. I think beyond the starting lineup, you're going to see something very similar. Because, I mean, last year, Aaron McKee made quick subs. He liked playing an 8-9-10-man rotation, put in a guy for a couple minutes, and then give him a blow, yank him out if he makes a mistake. And, you know, playing a deep rotation, playing guys in shorter spurts to keep fresh legs on the floor at all times and to be able to play an up-tempo style of basketball. So I would say, Sam, I agree with you with that five, but I think, you know, having Caleb, having Quincy, having Jeremiah off the bench, I think they're all going to see good minutes. And it's going to, the minutes aren't going to be as dispersed. I can't think of the word about like spacing and minutes and scoring. I don't know, but yeah, sure. Yeah, distributing. The distribution of scoring and the distribution of minutes, I think, are going to be similar in the sense that it's going to be more evenly spread out as opposed to last year when it was pretty much Quentin Rose, Napier, Lee, and Alani Moore.
And just one more point I want to add. I mean, I don't know how much this has to do with it, but going back to the bench, I mean, yeah, the team last year had more continuity, more whatever you want to say, just because of the ill ability to have a practice, be able to practice on a consistent basis, talk to each other, that sort of chemistry. But I think what the bench has this year that it didn't is that they're going to have guys who can come off the bench and be able to shoot and get you back in the game with some 3-point shooting. They really didn't have that because Alani played 30 minutes a game. And besides that, who did you really have coming off the bench to shoot threes? Was it Sam's boy, Monty Scott?
Enough. Monty Scott slander on this pod. Only Monty Scott slander.
I would always stick up for him, but yeah, you know, I wish him well. I still think
we do wish him well.
Flashes, but
he's a good player.
I think that the lineup that we'll see the most minutes would be Ty Strickland, Damian Dunn, Dre Perry, Caleb Battle, and Jake Forrester. I think that JP will start. I just think that Caleb, again, he played sparingly at Butler, but to me, he just reminds me of a guy who could be that next great volume scorer and shooter at Temple. And I think as cliche as it sounds, I think even if JP is the guy that starts the game, I think that Caleb's going to play a lot of minutes off the bench. I think that might be the five that you might see, but you know, if JP takes minutes, then that's a good thing. That means he's rebounding from a very uneven season last year, but that would be my five. Sam, one of the things I wanted to ask you before we got to another mailbag question here is, you know, you talked about how Aaron, especially early on, would run through a lot of subs. And I think at first people loved that. I think it was easy for them to love it because they were winning, especially you know, they blew out St. Joe's, put up, 108 points on them. And he was going through, going through subs quickly. And I guess maybe when you're winning, it looks good. But then when they hit that lull, you know, they lost so badly at Tulsa. And I mean, I think even Aaron himself said they were never really the same after that. And the season kind of, you know, sputtered out with this resounding thud. Do you think, I mean, beyond the obvious of like, hey, they didn't finish well, do you think that was a good thing? Or do you think that was a bad thing for him from a guy who's covering the team? Do you think rifling through subs quickly, do you think that that hurt some guys last year in terms of continuity and not allowing them to really kind of work through mistakes? Or do you think that's kind of an overblown notion?
I think there's a lot of variables that go into it. And I'm a fan of quick subs, keeping fresh legs on the floor, especially in the way that Aaron McKee wants to play and getting guys up and down the floor and pushing the pace. With that being said, what happened last year, I think you're absolutely right. When you have a younger team, that sometimes not letting guys work through mistakes. And this is something, John, that you had brought up a good amount last year, like when we were kind of diagnosed Josh Pierre-Louis' game, is that he's a really, really good athlete. Mm-hmm. And if he was able to work through mistakes, maybe he'd be able to correct those mistakes and fix things, and which I think is a really strong point. But also, I wouldn't totally credit the last season just kind of sputtering out to quick subs and guys not being able to work through mistakes. I think part of it, you have to credit to how many games did they lose because the team just went into a 2-3 zone. Mm-hmm. And how many games did it take for them to figure out how to play against 2-3 zone? I think it was like that Tulsa game, I believe, was one of the first games where a team really harped on a 2-3 zone and they just could not do anything offensively. And it took a couple games. I think it was the Wichita State game, maybe. It was a couple weeks later that Aaron McKee tried a small ball offense, put Quentin Rose smack dab in the middle of the 2-3 zone, and they were able to work through things. So there's a lot of variables that go into the reason that team kind of sputtered out. But I think it's a good argument to make that you want young guys to be able to work through mistakes, but in the style of offense and the style of play that Aaron McKee is envisioning and with the style of play that he wants to play, that just makes more sense.
Another mailbag question here. And I think this is the final one here to get from the message board. This is from West Coast Al. Any update on who is healthy versus who isn't? And we've got, you know, we can talk about, Jaleel White still recovering from his torn meniscus surgery. You guys were in Aaron's presser yesterday. I was not. What did he say anything about Jaleel White when it came time to asking about injuries or any injury related stuff that you wanted to pass along?
He didn't give any updates on Jaleel White. As we've reported already, that Ty Strickland is the game time decision for Saturday. I believe he has rejoined the team in practice in some capacity, but the big thing is they don't want to rush him because he still has 3 years of eligibility left. So they don't want to rush his health, which if I were a betting man, I would say he probably doesn't play Saturday for that sole reason that Aaron McKee does not want to rush him back. I mean, think about last year, how many games it took that Damian Dunn probably could have played, but until he did play, there was probably a 3 or 4 at least game stretch where he could have played, but didn't. So I would guess Ty doesn't play, but Aaron McKee said he's a game time decision. Brendan Berry, Sam's guy, has not joined the team in practice yet. They're still, Aaron McKee said, quote unquote, they're still waiting on more information to get him back. Those were the injury updates that he,
If I were a betting man, we probably won't see Brendan Berry until the new year. At this point, you make the point about Ty. I feel like they probably want to have him for that Houston game because they know how much of a challenge it might be, and not to like dump on NJIT because NJIT could very well. I mean, anything can happen in college basketball, but obviously, you'd probably rather have Ty for Houston. Then the only other injury that Aaron was a bit coy about, didn't really want to talk about him, kind of avoided the question, was Sage Tolbert. I mean, obviously we've reported that he's, you know, recovering from knee surgery that he had at Southeast Missouri State, but Sam, he didn't really say anything about Sage. Didn't really want to offer an update.
He didn't give any specifics. No, he said, yeah, you know, it'd be great to have him, but as of right now, not sure.
Yeah. Again, I think fans looking in say, okay, it's an eligibility free season. What do you have to lose? Play him. But he's coming off that knee surgery. If I were a betting man, I would think if you do see him at all this year, it might not be until maybe February. But again, it's not so much about the eligibility. You're not burning a redshirt year if you play Sage Tolbert this year. It's just about him coming back from a knee injury and the staff being ultra careful about it, because they really do. Yeah, they really do like him. With Jaleel White, second time he's recovering from torn meniscus surgery, I believe it's his left knee. I wouldn't be totally surprised if you don't see him at all this year. Again, we don't have any official word on that, but I think we talked about this last week. The early reviews on him were really good, probably ahead of where I thought he might be. You know, a 6'8" guard who can handle the ball. You know, sometimes people will say, you know, that he's not super, super quick. Sam, you saw him play live, but he's really fluid and really smooth and continues to get better. You know, if he can play 1 through 4 and handle the ball, and he's the guy you don't want to rush back, I think he might have rushed back a little bit from when he hurt his meniscus the first time around at Wildwood Catholic. Doubt that you'll see him until, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see Jaleel White at all this season. Wouldn't be totally surprised if you don't see Sage Tolbert this season, unless they feel really good about Sage and maybe February, but that would be my best, you know, batch of,
especially because it's an eligibility for year.
One that I wanted to add. I mean, this is not something they've talked about. I mean, they mentioned it earlier in the media availability, but it's something worth keeping an eye on is Arashma Parks' shoulder. Yeah. They really need Arashma to be healthy this year in order to, you know, be able to crash the boards in the front court.
They'll be very thin in the front court if they don't have Sage, or if God forbid, if something does happen to Arashma, or if he isn't able to play.
He was in some of the photos we saw from practice that he's wearing a brace on his shoulder. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll see if he wears it on Saturday. And Sam, you mentioned Houston, that report that came out today that Kelvin Sampson said that 15 of his players have had COVID. When I first read that, I thought he said 15 players on my team have COVID.
That's and I almost threw up. Thought, wow.
I almost threw
really,
up. I was
really not playing.
It sounds like, from the most part, that a lot of college basketball programs this summer just got absolutely bulldozed by COVID.
Yeah.
Florida, Cincinnati's head coach came out and said that 90% of the team had it.
Mm-hmm.
Houston.
That's wild. Well, Aaron McKee said, John, I don't know if you caught this, but during his press conference on Wednesday, Aaron McKee said that when they were scheduled to play at Mohegan Sun against Virginia Tech, they had 5 healthy bodies.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. 5 healthy bodies.
Do we think we can name those 5 guys? No.
No, because I'm guessing it was COVID related and injury related. So I'm not even going to try to speculate who has COVID and who doesn't.
And then JP was away from the team too. So during that
too.
So
I believe JP was away from the team for, yeah,
a family issue.
Family issue. Yeah. So, yeah. But again, unless things change suddenly, Temple's finally going to play a basketball game. So we'll try to squeeze in. I'm not sure if we're going to do one more pod before the Christmas break. We'll see. We'll talk about it. But that should do it for today. A big, big thank you to Amir Tyler for joining us, shedding some light on what's going on with the Temple football program from his perspective. Big thank you to Sam Cohn and Sam Newman for always just being incredible at what they do and hanging out with me during a podcast. And no Kyle Gauss today. He's taking the day off, but we miss him from yesterday. And thank you to all of you for sticking with us through the scoop, listening to the podcast through what's been anything but a typical fall. So we might talk to you next week. If not, we will talk to you in the new year. So hope you guys are all happy, healthy, spending time with family if you can, if you're able to, whatever you're celebrating, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, if you're not celebrating anything at all, hope you guys are doing well out there, and we will talk to you soon.